Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. We're continuing our deep dive series on suicide prevention for veterans, and today I'm honored to be joined by Sabrina Barella. She's an active voice in many military nonprofits and has made it her mission to help end veteran suicide. Thank you so much for joining us, Sabrina. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Erin. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start off and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, that's such a broad question. So a few weeks ago, I actually gave a presentation at a women's retreat, and the name of the presentation was Connecting the Dots in Your Life. And I tied it to this quote by Steve Jobs that he says, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, karma, God, whatever. And so as I'm doing this presentation, I was looking back at all these different moments in my life that, came up to where I am today. And when I look back at my life, especially my entire adult life and how everything, the things that I didn't understand at the time, how everything has happened for me, everything has brought me up to the work that I'm doing today. It led me up to doing the work with the military, to one of my big missions, like you said, is making a marked impact in lowering both the suicide and the divorce rates within the military and veteran communities. That is something that I'm passionate about. So I'm here in San Diego. I have a couple different companies, a couple different ventures I'm working on, but my real passion is in working with the military. Terry, and the closest community that I have right now that I really connect with strongly are the combat wounded veterans. And that's really what a lot of my work has come out of too, is working with those guys.
Well, that's amazing. How long has your foray into being of service with the military members? How long have you been doing that for?
So I started, the Marine Corps has been my family my entire adult life. So I'm 37 now. So that's what, going on 20 years.
Me too. Birthday sisters.
Awesome. At 23, I met a charming Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps and married him. And that was one of the first dots in my life that led me to where I am now. So he was in, the first 2 years, transitioned out around our second anniversary, and he had such a hard time transitioning back to civilian life. I mean, he had only been in 4 years and he had a hard time transitioning. And that transition, which at the time I did not have the tools, I didn't know how to do relationships. We were young and dumb, but I had no idea how to support him through that transition. And that ultimately, we stuck it out another 2 years, but that ultimately was the beginning of the end for our marriage. And we ended up getting divorced after a total of being married about 4 years. And so after I got divorced, I said, okay, Sabrina, I need to do something productive with my time. And I don't want to just go back into partying and drinking or, what some other people do after a relationship breaks up. And so I wanted to find some volunteer work to do on top of working. And so I looked at different things and I said, okay, I can't work with sick or dying kids or animals or that just won't work for me. But then I was like, the military has been my family and my community, and there's so much more I could do. And it just, it seemed like a fitting place to start. And so I was in line at the grocery store one day, and it was literally just like a month or two after the divorce had gone through. And there was a gentleman, an older gentleman that was behind me in line that had a hat on that said USO San Diego. And that's actually where I got my start. And so that was in 2008. So it's been 10 years this year that I started volunteering with the USO San Diego and running shifts at the airport center. And then within 2 years of that, I was introduced through the USO to the Wounded Warrior Battalion on Camp Pendleton. So that's the battalion, active duty Marines. And back at that time in 2010 was when still, you know, there was a lot of combat going on. So the majority of guys going through the battalion at the time were combat wounded. And that's really kind of where it started. So just, you know, the connection started to develop. The command, you know, they loved me. They basically just adopted me. And it ended up being, whereas, you know, before I was maybe spending, you know, 80-90% of my time with the USO and 10-20% of the battalion, it totally flipped. And so the battalion, they would start asking me to come volunteer at other events. I volunteered a lot of the sporting events is what I started with. And when I was at these sporting competitions, I quickly realized within the first year or two that, you know, whereas in the beginning, my volunteer work looked like passing out waters and snacks and cheering and, you know, just being there. And I realized really quickly that where my strength was or where I was meant to be was actually rather than being behind a table. And I don't say this, you know, is any offense to anybody, because we need those volunteers too to be there. But for me, my place was to be sitting on the bench or to be available to listen when somebody needed to talk. And so I have been able to, you know, to quickly connect with a lot of the guys. And a lot of times, you know, the ones who are quiet, the ones who maybe aren't engaging as much, that, you know, I can just go sit down and next to them. And a lot of times it's, you know, it's in that quietness and just being a safe person to listen and allow them to talk with no judgment. And they would just start opening up to me. And so And that's kind of what led to more and more invitations. Is I've had, you know, I have the sergeant major, the counselors, the, you know, the family readiness officers would just be like, you know, they would invite me to all these events because they would see this. Like they would see some of the guys who didn't open up to barely anybody else were sitting there having a 30-minute conversation with me. Or I shouldn't say conversation, like I'm listening to them. They're opening up to me. And so I would start getting invites like, hey, come to this event, come to this event, come to this event. And I'd be like, okay, great. What do you want me to do? And they're like, you don't need to do anything. We just need you to be there. Like just show up, you know, and just like be you. And I was like, okay. Does that make sense? Like, and that's just kind of how it's evolved over the years.
Yeah. Just by putting yourself out there and being there for people has led to some pretty great things.
One of the biggest keys when it comes to anybody, you know, being able to open up and talk about things that are, you know, that are super vulnerable is that the person on the other end, the person who's hearing, that they need to be safe to talk to. And being safe to talk to, being, you know, someone who a person will trust to open up to, that's not something that happens naturally. It's a way that I was actually taught by a mentor of mine to be. So is how to be a safe person to talk to. And that's something that I learned. This was something that I learned post-divorce. And I found the work by a lady named Allison Armstrong, who's been one of my mentors in the you know, partnership relationship realm, you know, interacting with men and women. And that's where the Understand Men and Women with my company comes in, is it's based on Allison's body of work. And she was the one I learned through her body of work how to relate to men differently, how to relate to women, how to relate to myself. And it's so true what they say about, like, women, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Like we are totally different breeds. And so there's different things that men need to feel safe versus what women need to feel safe. And it was really learning that and really understanding and getting that and then applying it in my life where, you know, those were the tools that I was enacting in order to, you know, to come in and do the work that I'm doing.
Wow. That's absolutely fascinating. I'll have to check her out.
Yeah. She's amazing. And I know, cause I know, like I say, we'll talk probably a little more about the Understand Men and Women and literally what has happened with this company and how it's evolved is that me and my business partner, pretty much like we're taking the, you know, the curriculum and the classes and the information from Allison's body of work, and we're bringing it into the military.
So let's just jump right into mm-hmm. that. Let's talk about some of those organizations okay. that you're involved in and what they do.
Okay. So I found Alison Armstrong's body of work back in 2012. And I did this personally for my own, you know, I'm like, okay, like something isn't working right in my relationships and I'm the common denominator. So let's put on our big girl panties, Sabrina, and figure this one out. So I took her whole curriculum out in the civilian world and it changed my life. Like it completely changed my life. And I'll never forget because the very first day of the very first course I took, I remember walking out of there and saying to myself, like, you know, number one, even though I don't believe in having regrets, I was like, God, like how different could this have been if I would have had this when I was married? You know, if I knew this, how different men and women really are, if I got the differences back then, how different would it be? And then the second thing was, I need to get this into the military and I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. Wow. And that's how it came across. And, you know, it took me a couple years, actually. It took me, cause that was 2012, 2013 when I found her body of work. And then, you know, it took me about a year or so to figure out, okay, who are the people in the military that I need to talk to? Who do I need to, you know, get in front of, and build a relationship with in order to do that. And then I needed to find support in a team on my end, you know, in like through Allison's community, who's going to help me do it. Cause I can't, it's not something that one person could do by themselves. Like we literally, pun intended, needed an army. And and it actually ended up being through the Wounded Warrior Battalion. Well, let me back up a little bit. People within Allison's community, there are several people who are certified to teach her body of work, and they had been trying to get into the military and trying to do classes on base for upwards of 10 to 15 years, because she's been doing this for like 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And nobody's been able to do it. And so when you talk about, you know, looking like connecting the dots, looking backwards, the Wounded Warrior Battalion, they were the ones that because I had already had that pre-established relationship with them and because they knew me and they trusted me, when I came to them and said, you know what, look, like I've got this new program I want to introduce. It changed my life. I know that it could make a difference. You know, I'm already sharing it with all, you know, with my friends and, you know, the guys I know, and it's make a difference for them. Like, how do we get this official? Like, how do we actually teach classes? And so they were the first ones that literally said, you know, okay, we're going to let you do this because we trust you. And it was through them. And then quickly, you know, after doing our first class, which was back in 2015, it's our first class with Wounded Warrior Battalion, you know, the results were just incredible. You know, the results that they were getting, the testimonials that we were asked within about a year to expand. And so a lot of higher up, like I say, sergeant majors, commanding officers were like, okay, you know, this is not anything that the military is teaching. And, you know, you guys should expand the program. Like, more people need to hear this than just us. And so that led me and my business partner, David, on this track of actually starting a company around it. And today we're actually working on getting a contract to bring it out on a bigger level. Cause right now, thus far, we've only taught classes here in San Diego, mostly Camp Pendleton, a little bit on Miramar and Balboa Naval Station.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What kind of changes have you seen in some of the people who have participated in these classes? What do they come out looking and sounding like?
Yeah, definitely. So what we teach is we're teaching, and you know, like what you see on the website, our like our tagline, so to speak, is we teach the families, you know, the military service members and their families, how to be the first line of defense when it comes to being resilient, and then the readiness. And we offer it through our workshops and our classes on how to convert adversarial relationships into healthy and powerful partnerships. And we take a look at instinct. So we take a look at how it's all based on how, like, understanding the difference in how our instincts cause tension and friction and not just in our relationships, but in every interaction. You know, because I mean, like, a relationship is just a moment of relating to another person. So, you know, we can have tension in an interaction with the person behind the Starbucks counter or, you know, in line at the grocery store. And it's, you know, there's all these moments. And because we are triggered so differently, you know, our instincts are triggered in different ways and different instincts that causes, like I say, that causes tension, it causes friction, it causes misunderstandings, disrespect, hurt feelings, like, you know, we could go on and on. But mm-hmm. if you step back, when you understand what's actually going on in the moment, and that the other person is, you know, they're not trying to do something to you. They're not doing it because they're a bad person. They're just different. You know, they're seeing the world through a different lens than we are. And once we're aware of how these things work, it's like all the misunderstandings and the hurt feelings and all that, they just kind of seem to just fall away. And that's what leads the path or opens the door to really creating strong partnerships and support systems. And that's what leads to being a safe person to talk to. It's all connected.
I'm just thinking, you know, some that would work really well in the 911 dispatch field where I come from.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So what about some of the other organizations? Because it sounds like you have lots of different hats that you wear.
I do. So, oh gosh. Okay. Where do I start? So I talked about the USO, which is really, yeah, where I got my start as far as the volunteer side and all that. So one of the other, there are a few different organizations. And see, now I'm one of those people, it's like, I'm so passionate about what I do. And, you know, I'll see these organizations that come up and I'm like, oh my God, I love what they're doing. And I, you know, it's like, there's part of me that just, I wish I could be everywhere at once. But there are a few that I really just, you know, like I've honed down as far as my priorities go and, you know, who I really spend, you know, as much time as I can supporting outside of my own ventures. And so the first one is my good friends, Tim and Lorraine Chambers, have the Saluting Marine Foundation. Tim is he's a Marine Corps veteran. And I just started working with them over the last couple years. And his foundation is all around supporting veterans with the mostly around financial needs to fill in the gap where the VA leaves a gap. And so, you know, whether it's like housing or dental or, you know, anything that comes in, he does this. And he does a lot of traveling. He speaks at events and he does a lot primarily with the Vietnam veteran generation. And he gets asked to come out a lot and visit Vietnam vets who are dying, who maybe don't have a family or don't have a huge support system, and he'll go out and he'll spend time with them. So just amazing, amazing people. I love what they're doing. Like I say, the Saluting Marine, that's been one that I've been spending a lot of time with outside of my stuff. And then a few other friends that I've connected with. One of the things about working in this realm is just, I mean, number one, like I say, the military has just been my family. And so I'm just around rock stars all day long. And because mm-hmm. I am also a full-time entrepreneur myself, I also have connected with this community and this group of veterans who then get out of the military and still want to serve. So now they're going off and they're doing their own things as well. So I recently this last year started doing a little bit of work with Vets for Child Rescue, which is Greg Sawyer. He's here in mostly, you know, like the south and western part of the US, and they are leading the fight against child sex trafficking.
Oh, wow.
Same people. Yeah. It's, yeah, Vets for Child Rescue, absolutely amazing organization. They're one of those that I wish I could, like, you know, like if I didn't have anything else going on, I would do so much more with them. But I do as much as I can. I help, you know, as far as like even some social media and like just getting the word out and that kind of stuff with them.
Oh, what else am I doing?
Everything. I know. Well, and then another friend who I recently met, his name is Greg Jooms. He's another Marine Corps veteran, and he got out a few years back. He's Chicago-based, actually, but he got out, and he and a team of other Marine Corps veterans got together, and they saw this gap when going through the transition process, which I referred to how tricky and hard the transition process can be, because I lived through that myself with my ex-husband. So he and his friends were having the same thing. And so they actually developed an app called Victor, which I call it like Siri for veterans. It's absolutely amazing. And it's like this one-stop shop for anything they could need or want. You know, it's even like if, you know, if they're feeling anxiety and they need to figure out something and they can't figure it out, like you go and you ask Victor and like the resources will pop up and it connects them with local resources or, you know, or if they have questions on their benefits or if they need to know, you know, what, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. It's absolutely an amazing app, and they're working on the funding and all that to go nationwide. So I'm really excited. And, I'm, you know, right now, a lot of what I do with the other organizations, just like getting the word out. So I tell everybody about that. Every veteran that I meet, I tell them about this Victor app to look for it. I think that's going to be a really big thing coming up in the next couple years, as far as technology goes and helping veterans through the transition process.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible to have that much knowledge and information at your fingertips, and that you don't have the anxiety or the stigma to try to find those resources yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. And especially when, especially if there's anything else going on, you know, as far as, I mean, not just PTSD, but even there's so much stress and anxiety around the transition process. Cause the military is a way of life. Like that, the military is them. It defines them. It defines who they are and what they do. And so, and then all of a sudden one day, you know, it's, I don't even know, it's, there's some prep work that can be done, but I don't know if there's really anything that can truly, truly prepare them for that day when it's like they figuratively step off the base and they step into the civilian world. You know, because it's just, it's a totally different ball game. And because only like 1% of our, you know, nation's population are serving in the military, there are so many people who are so out of touch with what it's like. And so they step out into the civilian world and, you know, it's like the wobbly ground. They don't have the foundation. Now who am I? Like the military doesn't find me anymore. Who am I as a civilian? What do I want to do? How does this translate? You know, if they've been in combat, that adds extra layers. And so yeah, just the anything that can shortcut or provide a quick solution to bring that anxiety down is huge. And that leads to, that's like right into what we're talking about with suicide, you know, cause it's not like somebody just decides in an instant that they're going to commit suicide. It's something that typically builds up.
Mm-hmm. Since we're kind of going into that topic anyway, let's talk about from your perspective and you and your experiences working with these veterans and with your ex-husband, what do veterans need to support their mental health?
So the two biggest things, and this is going to be broad, but we can go into more details. When it comes to mental health, health in general, and also when we're talking about preventing both suicide and divorce, there's two things. There's finances and support system. Those are the two big things. I'm like, if we figure out as a, you know, on the civilian side, how to help them with those two things, then we bring both those rates down immediately. You know, not to say that there's a simple solution for each and everybody's in, you know, different individually, but supporting mental health, that's a very broad question too. Yeah, I was going to say, as far as I'll speak to what I know on the relationship side of things is having a solid support system around them. What I see in a lot of families, you know, and I've seen this over the years, is that when, you know, when they're going through the transition, which like I say, so I went through this myself. And then over the years that I've worked with a lot of the couples coming through Wounded Warrior Battalion, you know, and another battalion as well, the wife who's left at home, a lot of times from the spouse's side, you know, depending on how involved they've been or how much they, you know, they even talk about, you know, about the military spouse's life in the military, you know, depending on how open they are about that, the spouses, a lot of time, they still don't know how to support them. Yeah. So one of the things that I see a lot with these couples is depending on their level of communication and the strength of their relationship to start with, and not that those are even, you know, definitive that they're going to be okay, so to speak, but a lot of times they don't know, both the veteran coming out doesn't know how to communicate what they're going through to their spouse and those closest to them. And the spouse doesn't know what they need to support. And so it often leads to tension, fighting, you know, a breakdown in the marriage. Sometimes maybe the spouse might try and overcompensate by, you know, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And they often will, and this is another, you know, like the differences in men and women a lot of times is that, you know, because primarily the greater majority would be men as the veterans mm-hmm. and women as the spouses, is that they're trying, you know, as women, it's like we're trying to offer the kind of support that we would want as a woman, when the kind of, when that to a man can actually be very smothering. And so they're, you know, they're, I think they're both very well meaning. But then on the veteran side, like I say, they come out and, you know, especially as a man, although I see this in the females too, is like, it's like losing their identity. So it's like whatever age they're at, if they're 22 and they're going to the military, it's almost like a midlife crisis. So they come out and, okay, what do I do now? What am, you know, and they could have had the clearest picture of what they're going to do the next 20 years of their life. Like, I'm going to get out of the military and I'm going to do this and this and this. There still seems to always be that day where they step off the base and all of a sudden, I don't know how else to describe it except a midlife crisis. So like they, and like, oh my gosh. Okay, yeah, like I don't have that I don't have the military as a foundation anymore. What do I do now? And they start questioning things. And if they don't, a lot of times they can't even figure out in themselves what's going on. And so being able to explain it to someone else is hard, number one. And then number two, especially for men, being, you know, men very much are wired to, you know, to be the protectors and the providers for their family. And so for men especially, I see this in veterans, is they, you know, when they're coming out of having this, you know, okay, they know how to protect, they know how to provide, you know, the military provided all these things for their family. You know, you had the paycheck, you had the benefits, you had all this stuff. And then when they're stepping out and they're going back in the civilian world and all of a sudden it's all on their shoulders again, it also adds that extra layer of anxiety for them of like, okay, now I've got to provide all my, you know, provide all this for my family. Am I going to be able to do it? And any anxiety and stress and concerns that they have going on inside themselves, they won't a lot of times communicate that to their spouse because they're trying to protect them from that. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Like, you know, like they don't want to add more stress to their spouse on top of everything else, the changes going on. So rather than talking about it, they try and deal with it just by themselves. And so that's why I say, like when you said, what do they need to support their mental health? Like they need a solid support structure around them. Cause that often it's all these stuff that build up that leads to the isolation.
That makes a lot of sense. And I feel so horrible for these people who have gone away and they've served our country nobly and they come home and they have to start a brand new life, but somehow fit it into the existing life that they left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they have to try and merge who they now are because they never come back the same person, you know, no matter if they saw death, if they killed somebody or not, like just the fact of deploying changes them. Mm-hmm. And so they have to bring the new version of themselves back into this world, you know, of the family. Cause it's like, you know, we're back here in the civilian world and life has just kept going for us, you know? And that's why too, it's a lot of times, even for family members, you know, when they come back and they're like, oh, you're different. And rather than accepting that or trying to, you know, work with it or just allow them the space to work things out. Like I say, a lot of times people don't know how to deal with this new version because the veteran themselves, you know, or the military member themselves that they're still in, I mean, they're figuring out themselves, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on within themselves. Mm-hmm. But it just, like I say, it leads to more and more isolation.
And what about suicide? From your experience working with the veterans and the families, do you have any insight on better ways that we can help prevent veteran suicide?
The biggest one for me is kind of what we've been talking about is, and I, you know, this was something, like I say, I don't want to say I stumbled into it. I feel like I was really called and brought about to it. But going through Allison's work and learning, really learning how to be a safe person to listen to. And it really has to do with, like, being safe has to do with like a non-judgment. Because what I see with a lot of the guys primarily, so like I say, that when I work with, like, the combat wounded veterans, a lot of who has PTSD, a lot of suicide, you know, people who are suicidal at some point, and they're afraid to open up to people or to say, you know, whether it's especially people they care about or their family members, they're afraid that if they actually share what they've been through or what's going on in their head with, say, their spouse or a parent or a loved one, you know, or even a close friend who hasn't been in combat, they're afraid that the person will stop loving them, you know, will see them differently, will judge them for it. And so they don't share. So they keep it inside. You know, that's where a lot of the isolation comes to. And I think that's kind of part of the first, the early steps that it makes it very easy to slip into the path of being suicidal. So part of being a person who's safe to listen to is, you know, when I have this conversation, I mean, I can't tell you how many guys I've talked to, or I have guys who are now out in, you know, different parts of the US that are now, you know, in the veteran side. And they'll call me when they're, you know, when they're at that point. And one of the things that I've established with all these guys early on, you know, when I'm just building the friendship with them, is I'm like, there is nothing that you could say to me that is going to change how I feel about you, how much I respect you, how much I admire you, how much I love you. Like, you know, I'm like, what you have done is not you. You know, and it's not going to change for me. So they know, like, they know that they can say anything to me. And I mean, I have friends who have asked, you know, who will ask me, like, to share some of the stories. And I'm like, no, like, I'm not going to share the stories, because honestly, I don't think a lot of civilians could handle it, you know. But the guys know, like, they know that they can say anything and that it's not going to change anything between us. You know, like, I'm still here. I'm still supporting you. I'm here to listen. I'm not judging you. It's not going to change anything. And it's really just that permission to, like, okay, I can get this off my chest. Like, I can say this and it's not going to change anything. And it really is true what they say about, you know, they say, like, taking a load off your chest is, you know, a lot of times that I think what really contributes to going down the suicidal path is that all that stuff, all that ickiness and the crazy thoughts and the feelings of, you know, not being worthy and being unlovable and not be, you know, survivor's guilt, anything that's going on in their head, it's that they're letting it stew inside of them. And they're not, you know, they're not saying it out loud. So really, you know, like, when I say having that support system around them is just having somebody to talk to. You know, having somebody where you can get what is on the inside of you out and share it with someone else. It's like once you say it out loud, it's almost like some of that energy around it just dissipates.
They're able to release it.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, so, you know, sometimes I've been on the phone for 20 minutes and okay, they're good. Like, they just need to talk about what was in their head and then they're good and they're going to go back to whatever they're doing. And sometimes I've been on the phone for 3 or 4 hours with guys, you know, and it just, like, just get it out, you know, mm-hmm. Tell me the stories, tell me what you're going through, what's going on in your head, what are you not saying?
Well, and I think too, the retelling of their story and the things that they've seen or done and been through kind of helps their brain process it, you know, physiologically. Whereas if they're not able to share their story and be able to talk about it with anybody else, it just sits there, right? And it doesn't go through the normal processing stages.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. I think there's a time and a place for everything. So there's definitely a time and a place, like, if they, especially if they haven't talked about it much, to be able to say it. But the key is to be able to say it in a safe environment where they're not going to be judged for it. Because what happens a lot of times, like what happens to a lot of divorces and the breakdowns in relationships is, you know, the other spouse or the family members, they're pressing them. Tell me what happened. What happened over there? You know, why, like what, why are you having nightmares? Why are you, you know, whatever's going on? Did you kill anybody over there? Like, they want to know all these things, but they ask questions that they're not prepared to get the answers to. So the times where guys will actually answer, you know, because this, I mean, I've heard this in a lot of people that are suicidal too, is that, you know, it's like, yeah, like they're suicidal, not as much about the stuff that happened while they were in combat, but because of everything that happened afterwards and how their family and their support system has reacted since. So like in their minds, in the veterans' mind, they made the mistake of being honest with their family members or their spouses who wanted to know what they did, but then they told them the truth. And then all of a sudden, you know, that other person couldn't handle it. And so the other person starts looking at them differently. And that makes the relationships go spiral downwards. That's what leads to a lot of divorce. And I mean, I talk to women too, and I'm like, you know what you're asking. Like, don't ask a question unless you're prepared for the answer. The military creates warriors and they go over, you know, and if they go out in combat, I'm like, chances are, I'm like, they're, you know, there's the chance that they're going to have to kill people. And a lot of times people back home are not prepared to see somebody that they love in that capacity. And so it changes how they treat them. And that makes them very much not a safe person to talk to. And after that happens, like pretty much that only needs to happen once and they'll completely shut down. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to suicide.
So it's important to remember for the spouse or family member that just because the person's not sharing everything, every waking moment, every story, why they're having nightmares, why they're feeling that way, it doesn't mean it's because they don't love you. It's because that...
Because they're trying to protect
there are just something... Yeah, there's just some things that you need to trust that you probably don't need to know as long as this person has a safe place to share. That's what you need to make sure that they're getting.
Yes.
Is that it might not be you, and that's perfectly fine. Yes. But as long as they're finding a safe place to share it and you guys can go about your lives together.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, and it's really up to each individual. I think, unfortunately, a lot of times... Especially spouses would like to think that they're ready and prepared for it, but they don't realize that they're not. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's why too, I mean, very big in a lot of, you know, a lot of the circles too that I'm in is just encouraging veterans to get together with each other, you know, get together with, ideally it's great when the guys can stay in contact at least with one or more of the people that they, you know, deployed with, that they served with, but anybody who's been, you know, if they've been in combat, be with other combat veterans, you know, or just veterans. Like, I mean, be around people who understand what you've been through. Like, that's one of the biggest things. There's another organization I was just thinking of that I've recently started doing some stuff with. It's called Irreverent Warriors. The guy who started it, he was a Marine Corps as well. And he was actually at the Wounded Warrior Battalion a few years back. And so he got out, he started Irreverent Warriors, and they do a lot, but their whole mission is around preventing military and veteran suicide as well. And so they do hikes where it's like they have a Silkies hike coming up here in Oceanside. And it's, want to say, I'm hoping I'm not going to get the details wrong, but I believe it's a 22 mile or 22 kilometer hike. And some people will wear a 22 pound backpack, and it's all around the 22 a day. And it's only military and veterans can do the hike. And it's all about raising awareness. So I'll be there volunteering at that. And same guy, so Donnie O'Malley is what he goes by. He also started Veteran TV, which is another huge thing that I support and I recommend to all military and veterans or anybody who wants to try and understand the military better. It's a paid channel. It's all about... They basically reenact, so they're videos, like they're a bunch of short videos, and it's all based on military life, on different aspects of military life. It's a very dark humor, so be prepared if anybody gets that, but their whole spin on things, which I absolutely love because it fits right in with all the work that I do, is they take these stories of things that happened as part of military life, a lot of things that can be dark subjects. And they add a comedic spin to it. And so literally what happens, and I mean, they within the first year, like they literally just celebrated the first year and they had, I don't know what it was, 26,000 plus people are already subscribed to the channel. And they get people all the time saying, oh my God, you know, like, yes, like I was suicidal and this saved my life. And it, you know, so they're using comedy. they're bringing the comedy part. So they're another great one, like I say, that I'm supporting and working with as well. But yeah, I guess that goes back. I think, well, how did I get on that topic? I got on the topic because talking about veterans coming together. So another That's thing, awesome. Yeah, because Donnie and his team with Vet TV and Irreverent Warriors, they're also here in San Diego. So yeah, so we do meetups, getting together, you know, anywhere to just get them talking, get them associating with other people. Because one of the first or one of the big signs that you'll see, you know, from anybody who's like, oh, how do you know if a person's suicidal? Well, is that they isolate themselves. You know, so just getting them, you know, even like as a spouse or family member, if you're noticing that about someone in your life, one of your loved ones, one of the best things you can do is like, if they're not going to talk to you about whatever's going on, number one, don't push it, you know, but encourage them or find people who they will talk to come in and talk to them. You know, mm-hmm. So when I have friends, you know, or I might even meet, say I'll meet a veteran, they don't know me, they don't, you know, don't know me from Adam, don't know who I am, maybe they're not opening up to me as, you know, as easily as I would like them to be. I might just call up one of my other friends and like, oh, hey, you know, this guy is, you know, he's an infantry guy. Okay, who's one of my friends that was an infantry guy as well? You know, I'm going to ask him to reach out and connect. But it's just like, get them somebody to connect with that, you know, that like maybe they would understand some of what they've been through and what they're going through. Like that's one of the best things that the support system could do for them.
And all of these great organizations and businesses that you've mentioned, because there are so many, I'm going to put them on the page.
Awesome.
But as far as your business, the Understand Men and Women and how to contact you for that specifically.
Wonderful. Yes. So we have a website that everyone is welcome to go to and check out. And it's www.understandmenandwomen.com. So you'll see it. It has a military theme. And there, I mean, you can read more about us. You can read more about our workshops, our team, what we do. There's a section I have, which it's too long to read right now, but I added because it was important to me. It says Sabrina's Note of Importance. Of this work. And so I actually talk about one of the calls that I had with a friend who was suicidal and how that led to a lot of what we're doing, and as well as some testimonials and stuff like that. And there's also a free resources tab that this is, you know, not just for people who are military and veterans, but the free resources actually connects with Allison Armstrong's work. And so there is a plethora of audios, videos, articles, like whatever your poison is for self-development, a ton of free resources that, you know, just to introduce you more to the differences and how instinct works and being safe and all this stuff. Like there's so much to it. So I definitely recommend that everybody check that out as well. Our free resources section at understandmenandwomen.com. You know, you can connect with me, the phone number, or by email through the website as well. Shoot me an email. One of the things that we're working on right now actually is getting, because we primarily only done our stuff directly with the military, but there's been a very large demand in the veteran world as well, especially people who are recently transitioning. And so I'm working on figuring out funding and stuff like that to be able to put on a series of our workshops at the Veterans Resource Center here in Oceanside. And so to open it up to both military and veterans. So we're working on that right now. But yeah, if anybody be interested in helping us with that, then please, you can reach out and send me an email. It would be awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or want to talk about anything that we may have missed?
Oh, gosh.
All the things.
I know. You know, I think one of the biggest things, which I know I mentioned this earlier, was about how the majority of the population, not just the U.S., I mean, even it gets worse in other countries, but in the U.S., are so out of touch with the fact that, you know, less than 1% of our population serves and that they're volunteering to serve. And because they're so out of touch, it, you know, they don't understand. They and I think that's where the disconnect comes in. You know, we talk about we need to take care of our veterans better. And, you know, and I hear this so often, we need to take care of our veterans better. And like, yes, we do need to take care of our veterans. One thing that a discussion that I've had several times and, you know, with a lot of other people, especially in like this nonprofit, you know, business world, is that there's been this argument in certain circles over whose job it is to bring veterans, you know, take care of them. And while I understand, you know, the people who say, you know, oh, well, it happened in the military, so the military should take care of them, my way of looking at it is no. The military's job is to create warriors and to defend our country. It is our job as civilians to help bring them back and help reintegrate mm-hmm. them into society. So that's why I'm so passionate about doing, like, you know, doing what I'm doing with my business, doing what I do with the nonprofits. And I'm, and there's definitely an upsurge right now of veterans, you know, people who are either getting out or retiring from the military and going on to create their own businesses around gaps that they're seeing. And I think that's where the strength comes in our country. You know, I'm like, wait, it's not up to the government or the military to bring them back. It's up to us. So anybody who, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming if they're listening this long, you know, to the podcast and the platform is just, you know, whatever area you're passionate about, do research, find nonprofits, find organizations that are, you know, that are doing things to help them and making a difference and get involved however you can. Because we need it. We need the help. We can't do it alone. We do need an army. I'm like the friends and the family, like these guys that are my family. Any one of them, you know, it's like they're not in the military anymore. You know, a lot of my friends are amputees. They would take a bullet for me in a heartbeat. You know, they have been there for me in times when my other friends weren't, you know, because being one thing about the military is they know the value of honor and integrity. And so bringing that forth like into the civilian world, into, you know, our country, I think some people don't even realize like the value that we have in these people and what they can contribute to the country. Some of them just need a little, you know, a hand up, so to speak. They need a little help getting that, you know, that foundation under them once they get out. And the value that they add to our society is just invaluable.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sabrina, for joining us. I really appreciate all of your knowledge that you shared with us. And if you guys are looking for all of the different resources and organizations that Sabrina talked about, that'll be on the resource page and on her podcast page. So thanks again, Sabrina. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Erin. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast, and you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.